Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are talking about the bubble, the second proposed NBA bubble. I'm writing about that if you're the sort, so that'll either be up on the 4th or later on July 3rd. So be on the lookout for that. And we're also talking about the book club, the first couple chapters of Vintage Cavs. Due to the late breaking news about the bubble and the time we spent on that, chapter 4, which is all about the naming of the team, is going to be pushed to next week. So today's episode of Vintage Book Club on Vintage Cavs is just chapters 1 through 3 and kind of a primer on the book to come. But here's today's show on all about the bubble and Vintage Cavs, a time way, way before there was anything resembling COVID-19.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him today at the Q.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
All right, guys, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. We're going to do the book club, but there's some breaking news of sorts in the NBA bubble world, which is a weird way to put it, but there is a discussion now even further than we talked about the other day about a non-playoff team bubble in Chicago. It would be up to the standards of the Orlando bubble. Basically, we know the Cavs are in favor of this. We'll have to see how Orlando goes, basically, is what one GM said. There's some, you know, the ESPN story from Jack McMullen has some injury comments in there. But, Evan, what are your just initial thoughts on this?
Well, I tweeted a joke about it, and I thought I was pretty funny on my own part. Chris, you watched a little bit of SpongeBob back in the day. You know, what's worse than one paint bubble, two paint bubbles? That's just pretty much my thought process on this. One bubble's already dangerous enough with what they're trying to pull off in Orlando, and I mean, Florida's the center of attention for the fact that they're amassing over 10,000 cases per day, which is staggering, and the number just keeps going up and up and up as people just don't care anymore about COVID-19. Don't really know what Illinois' numbers are, so I just think it's stupid and foolish. I mean, I get, like, you don't want to have these teams go 9 months without playing organized competitive basketball, but I think regional training camps and mini camps like the Warriors want, and like you and I are proponents of, like the Cavs and the Pistons doing together, is a much better and safer alternative to what the NBA is proposing, at least in terms of a summer league, but not summer league because it's before the draft kind of situation for these Delete Eight squads.
Yeah, I think that's pretty right. I think they're obviously, look, I'm not going to out here and say, like, I obviously have my concerns about the health aspect of this. I'm not going to sit here and, like, go into those a bunch because I don't think that's particularly useful or, like, interesting podcasting, frankly. But the health concerns are very real. And I think if those are not part of your kind of thought process in this, then you're kind of looking at this wrong. There is going to be health concerns with this. I think my biggest question is just what this looks like. It's not in the Jackie McMullen story, but I think this would have been better if you could have done this after free agency or after the draft, because I think the team like the Cavs could have gotten more out of that. I think all these teams will get a chance to kind of integrate some of the new pieces in a way that would actually be more beneficial for them next season. You know, I think that just to me makes a lot of sense for a lot of logistical reasons. I get why you might not do that, because I think the other 22 teams would kind of be mad at this. I also don't know what Cavs you would think are going to go, right? Like, if you look at this, like, yeah. I don't expect Deli or Tristan to play just in terms of because they're free agents.
Nope. I don't expect Kevin to play. I don't expect Larry to play. I don't expect Andre to play. It's going to be weird. It's going to be basically young guys. And then
here's
G League guys. I don't know.
Well, this is like probably, this will be a good chance for Dean Wade and Jordan Bell to make a case for themselves as roster pieces. I think these are guys that'll get a good opportunity out of this. I think they're definitely, if there's winners in this, they're kind of winners. I could see Kevin and Larry playing because Larry playing because he's kind of hinted at it. Kevin is sort of in that Blake Griffin class where you wonder if it's worth the risk. Same thing with Andre. Larry's kind of in the middle ground for me there, I guess. But basically, like, let's just say you're right in that Kevin, Drummond, Tristan, Delly, Nance, Exum don't play. This would be the Cavs roster. Jetty Osman, Darius Garland, Colin Sexton, Dylan Windler, Alphonso McKinney, Jordan Bell, Kevin Porter Jr., Dean Wade. Obviously, Zizic is going to Real Madrid, as reported from a couple Spanish outlets. So, like, that's kind of, he's kind of off the table at this point. I would highly be shocked if we, you know, his time with the Cavs and maybe the NBA is done. If that doesn't change, if that changes, that would be sort of surprising. But, like, if you're looking at it, one, it's not that many guys. It's three, four, five, it's like nine guys. That's not a lot of guys. I think you would try to want to get, like, Larry and stuff there. I think if you're the Cavs, you want everybody there in some capacity. But guys can opt out. And I think how that is approached in the next 3 months as this kind of gets planned out, that'll be really interesting. Or 2 months, I should say.
It's 2 months still feels like it's going to be an eternity just waiting for something to happen. I could see something like Larry. I feel uncomfortable speculating on just from the fact that he has an autoimmune disease that, I mean, he was on the show telling us, like, he has to take all these extra risks and precautions, and he's, like, disinfecting his hands to the point where they're dried and cracked constantly. And I mean, he has limited interaction with just, like, the people. I mean, he's been at the practice facility. Obviously it's a safe and controlled environment. The Cavs are doing everything they can to make sure everything stays safe and controlled for people like him and people just for everyone in general. And so, like, but I can understand his desire to want to play, but at the same time, do you really want to risk dying over, playing a couple pickup games of basketball in the grand scheme of things that don't mean anything? Cause I think it's safe to assume, like, this won't have an impact on the team's records and, what they are striving for in terms of, like, the draft lottery and everything. Like, I just feel like these are just going to be, like, intramural scrimmages, basically. And maybe this, like you said, it's a good chance to look at guys like Jordan Bell. It's a good chance to look at guys like Dean Wade, who have more guaranteed money. And then maybe the Cavs invite a few other players from Canton and just kind of see what other foundational pieces they have, and just kind of figure it out from there. But if I was a veteran for the Cavs, there's no way I'd go to Chicago and risk catching this, especially if I'm a free agent.
Do you at the very least, Evan, are you with me in the sense that you understand why people want this and why teams like the Cavs are pushing for this? Health risks obviously are there. I very much understand why they're doing this. What makes sense? Does that make sense to you?
As a fan of this sport, selfishly, I'm happy that the sport that I like to watch the most is back. That's great, but at the same time, like, morally, I've been pretty firm on my stances that I think it's stupid that they're coming back. And I think it's I think a lot of what Adam Silver is saying, the fact that they're trying to unify people and bring people together with sports, like, I think that's just a bunch of wax poetic and a bunch of BS, and it's more of a cash grab.
It's capitalism thrown, like, with a sheen of goodwill in it.
Yeah, it's fake wokeness, and it's something that I've always kind of pushed back on what the NBA is trying to establish themselves as, and they're just proving me right what I get once again. And that's just kind of where I'm at in that sense. Would I be happy to see the Cavs again? Would I be happy to see how much of an absolute unit Colin Sexton is muscle-wise? Because he's probably going to play push from Atlanta to Chicago at this point and then play with the weights on his back while he plays. It's like, it'll be interesting to see what he's been up to. It'll be interesting to see if these Darius Garland highlight tapes that we're seeing on any social media platform are either it's a cock tease or it's a real thing. Like, if that's actually a thing, like, that'll be fun. See what Kevin Porter's been up to. And it'll be nice to see what the young players have been doing, because this is hugely detrimental to their development. But at the same time, is it really worth it? That's just my thought process. Because, again, we had David Ramil or Ramel, I always butcher people's names, on for an episode next week, and he was talking about, with us at least, that he feels like there's a very low chance that this Orlando thing is going to go off without a hitch. Maybe this is a good indicator to see, like, what the rest of these squads do. If, like, Orlando goes off well and, like, everything works great, I have no opposition to it, but I also have plenty of reservations on it actually happening. What about you?
Have a ton of reservations, have a lot of concerns. I understand, again, why these teams are asking for it. That's, and look, I do not want to be the person that is telling these teams exactly what and what they can and cannot do. I think that's concerning. I think these are teams and they're going to make decisions on their own. I personally would be more hesitant than these teams seem to being. What Carl Anthony Towns thinks about this remains one of the most fascinating things that we don't know right now, because his mother died from coronavirus and he theoretically could be playing in Chicago. There are a lot of questions I have. I know the Cavs, Bickerstaff, Kevin Love, Sexton, Nance have all said publicly in their exit interviews and whatnot that they want something like this, and I think this was going to happen. I think if it's going to happen, it's about doing it safely. We'll see how Orlando goes. You know, the bubble for MLS has become, like, rampant. Like, there's multiple COVID positive tests that weren't there when the players entered the bubble. So, like, there are definitely going to be how this plays out in America is going to be much really interesting. It's been done well in other countries. We'll see how it happens here. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back to talk about Vintage Cavs, the first couple chapters of that wonderful, wonderful book. Just want to let you guys know all about a sponsor that we have here, and that's Magic Spoon. Growing up, when you're growing up, cereal is obviously a classic breakfast, but you can do better than that now that you're an adult, and you can do that with Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon has 0 grams of sugar, 12 grams of protein, and only 3 grams of net carbs in every single serving. 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. Tastes amazing, too good to be true. It is keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. Wow. There are so many great flavors here you can choose from. It hits all of those cereal taste buds that you've eaten your whole life, just healthy now. You can go to magicspoon.com/NBA and get a variety pack and try it today. Be sure to use the promo code NBA at checkout to get free shipping. They're so confident in the product, 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Again, that's magicspoon.com/NBA. Use the promo code NBA for free shipping. And we'll be right back to talk about Vintage Cavs. All right, Evan, let's talk about Vintage Cavs. Listeners, you will notice a little change in the audio quality here. Just want you to be aware. We're pushing through because that's what we do here at Locked On Cavs. Evan, I just want to say this book is, I think, the big takeaway for me for these first two chapters. You know, Nick Moletti comes into focus more in the second chapter. I think this book is so very clearly Terry Pluto writing in a way where he can just kind of do what he wants and not necessarily be so tied to, like, reporting out a book about these Cavs. He actually gives us ideas for future book club options early on in this book.
Yeah, no, it really does.
But I find that I want to talk about in the segment is these first two chapters are some good information, but it really is so much more about setting the tone for what's to come, I think.
No, it really was, and I think because I started reading this book a little bit ahead of you, it's a lot of personal anecdotes in there, and like you said, a lot of good, there's like launching points for us to have conversations and future, like for even episodes about this book in itself, because it's just setting the table just on what, like you said, Terry, just talking about whatever he wants and when he wants. And it's just, again, how different things were. Like, I made a note in the first chapter when he's talking about where Richfield Coliseum was, and like he shows a picture of Cuyahoga Valley National Park, and then he shows a picture of Richfield Coliseum, and I'm just like, I have hiked in that exact spot. And I knew after the fact that's where the arena was. That, like, to really, like, look at the picture of the landscape and then directly underneath the picture of what the arena was, like, that's just kind of neat to think about and, like, a little weird to think. And, like, you also, like you said, you learn a lot about Nick Moletti in these first two chapters and how he's more of, like, a shyster and a really good businessman, and the fact that he was able to run a hockey team and the Cavs in themselves and pretty much with not that much money to his name, I mean, but still acted like he was like one of the wealthiest men in Cleveland. And definitely was led astray in the fact that I always thought Nick Moletti was just like an incredibly like wealthy man and had a lot going for him in that regard. And then it's just definitely surprising. It's just, I had a lot of fun reading this, and I'm excited to start breaking down some of this stuff and just like more so like a lot of like what's different compared to what you and I have experienced covering this team compared to what Terry experienced when he was covering this team when it was first founded, when he was a fan, and then like in the 80s and everything else.
Yeah, what did you make of him? The whole thing with World Be Free, I think, is just maybe the star anecdote of the first couple chapters. That and kind of the stuff with his dad, I just find very endearing. But would you willingly play horse with any Cavs player?
No, because I'd lose. And with the advent of social media for all my luck, and the fact that we roast each other pretty often, I feel like that would get out, and everyone would just never let me get into that, that I lost a horse to, I don't know, I can't even think of it. The problem is, like, I'm not a very good basketball player to begin with, so I feel like I'd just get absolutely embarrassed, and I just wouldn't be able to live it down at that point. But it's just more so interesting to think that, like, Terry considered, like, Wilby Freed and some other members, like, key players in the Cavs organization as friends, and maybe it's just the current scape of how the Cavs give access to their players and everything, but, like, no, I wouldn't consider, like, Kevin Love or Larry Nance, like, a friend. Like, friends of the pod, Larry Nance is a friend of the pod, don't get me wrong, but, no, I wouldn't consider, like, hey, do you want to go get dinner and hang out sometime? Like, it's just, like, they're so different of worlds in this day and age. And, like, that really stuck with me as well. It's just, like, a lot of just small differences that, like, obviously meant a lot to Terry. But, like, when I think about it, I'm like, it'd be really interesting to see, like, Chris Manning or even Chris Fedor playing a pickup game with some of the players and just watching that roll out in action. Would you play pickup or horse with any of the players, or would you just politely decline and watch?
I would, like, politely decline. I would ask for tips.
See, I'd ask for tips, but I feel like it'd also be a lost cause because I knew I wasn't good at basketball for the longest time, and when I was in middle school and I played pickup with my friends, I was just the tallest person, and all I did was rebound, and I refused to shoot. I refused to do anything. All I would do is rebound and just outlet it to the person who's the better player than me and just kind of keep drifting. And I don't think I can get by with that when playing pickup with a lot of these guys because it's so hyper competitive. So, you know, the tips, I feel like it'd be lost on me for sure.
Yeah, no, that I would just want like little bits of formation. Like, I would want to talk to like one of the coaches and then like actually just like talk to like, you know, like Phil Handy when he's here, or like Dan Garrett or something like that, just to give me like some pointers. Put me through like a drill. Put me through some drills where I can just like get a good sweat. That's all I'm really looking for in my old age.
Chris, you just turned 27, my friend. You're not that old.
I'm up to doing 30 minutes of mobility a day. Really into the mobility right now.
What is mobility in so like, does that just mean walking? I hope you're walking
no.
30 minutes a day, because that's a lot of sedentary lifestyle.
That would be bad. But I'm saying it's like lots of stretching, lots of flexibility work. It's a lot of just like keeping that posterior chain like kind of moving in the right direction, and not so I'm not feeling particularly like bad or anything like that.
Are you doing plyometrics? Like the goat
can in my house. If I was at the gym, I would be doing some plyo, but this is really like a lot of like flexibility and stretching and yoga type movements to just kind of keep my body feeling fresh. That's what I need to. I'd have to do like 30 minutes of that and then go through like a workout where I'd like probably like want to like lay on the ground after like they put me through a workout.
I get that. I guess I've been running. That's all I've been doing. And then my bad knee has just been hurting, and we're just talking about our personal fitness.
Well, let me ask you this. But let me ask you this: would the Cleveland Arena seems like an absolute disaster? Tickets were really cheap.
Can I talk about the fact that a handle of vodka was $4 in the '70s?
Incredible.
It's cheap vodka. It's not like a bottle of Tito's,
it's like Kamachka or something.
Yeah, it's got that good color, which was probably about $5 when I was a freshman in college, so I guess like that hasn't changed much, and it just kind of stopped blowing my mind a little bit. But
the other anecdote about this that blows my mind a little bit is the fact that people were smoking at games.
Isn't that weird to think?
That just sounds like
awful. Smoking became illegal in Ohio. Well, smoking became illegal in Ohio like in the mid-2000s, I think. Like, smoking in a public place, not illegal in general, but like, there used to be smoking and non-smoking sections in restaurants, and I can't even imagine, like, us sitting in the press box smothered by a haze of smoke at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse. I mean, like, that would be, that'd be absolutely miserable. Like, the smell of cigarettes already makes me sick to my stomach. Like, I can't even imagine playing and being around that. And, like, that's even when, like, player health and wellness wasn't even either. So, like, I'm sure these players smoked as well. So, like, I don't know. It'd be interesting to think.
I think this book and these first two chapters really remind you that this was a very different era of NBA, and that this was just
Terry literally says is a different era. He says this is his favorite era of basketball.
Which I would just I want to say this about that. I think Terry, one thing about this book that I don't particularly like is that Terry's a little bit like old man get off my lawn in a lot of this.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think I was texting you snippets of it, and you're like, that just giving off like really strong boomer energy here. I'm like, oh yeah, it totally is.
And there's
him complaining about the modern era of basketball, which like you and I love. Like, I get it. Like that cast team with Mark Price and Larry Nance and Brad Doherty and Hot Rod and everybody else is a lot of fun to watch. And like you and I watched a game of them getting trounced by Michael Jordan and had a good time watching and like just kind of like trying to draw parallels to the modern NBA. But I don't know. I think the 3-point era is a lot more fun than compared to what maybe Terry sat through.
Well, and he's like complaining about like 3-point shooting to some degree.
Which is kind of ironic when you think about the fact that if you took, again, this is a stance I always have, if you took Mark Price from in his heyday and in his prime and planted him in today's NBA, he would probably get the similar, same if not very similar accolades to Stephen Curry in terms of his shooting ability. And, you know, Mark Price was a revolutionary point guard way ahead of his time. And that's just kind of like the funny thing is like he's so hypercritical of it, but then you have like arguably one of the greatest shooters ever playing point guard for the Cavs.
Yeah. It's quite a weird thing. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, come back and talk about the next two chapters in this book of Vintage Cavs right after this. All right, Evan, let's get into chapter 3, which is really about Nick Mahleti. Maybe we'll just do, and I'm gonna double check that. So 3 is Nick Mahleti, and then 4 is the origin of the Cavaliers. Maybe we should save 4 for next week, just considering the breaking news. Because Nick Mahleti in himself is a big character.
Yeah, I talked about in the last segment, I always thought Nick Mahleti was just like a super affluent like tycoon in Cleveland. I didn't realize he's just a really good salesman and is able to convince people to buy stock. Like, that'd be such a cool collector's item to have, is like people who own stock in the Packers. Like, if you really need to have stock in the Cavs, like obviously the Guns bought all of it up at that point. So I researched into it a little bit, and the Guns, when they bought the team, more or less just bought up all the stock in the Cavs as well from like fans and everything else for like, I think they just offered tickets or something like that, which I think is a fair trade off. But no, just a lot of savvy business techniques by Nick Mahleti, who didn't really have many dimes to rub together, and was able to turn his vision of Cleveland being a premier NBA destination into a reality. And I give him a lot of credit for it, because we obviously wouldn't be where we are if he didn't do it. Mm-hmm.
I just find the way he goes about it just like so, it's like this could never happen now, you know?
No, not at all.
Like the shystiness of it, like the idea that he was like getting loans from people and basically like being like, you're going to make your money back later, and like didn't actually have the money. That is it is just like antithetical to every way that the league vets owners. Now, like if you and I were like, we're going to try to get an expansion team and we're just going to like cobble together money this way, we would be like, not only would we be outed by like Brian Windhorst within like a week, but like the NBA would be like, no, like you guys are frauds. Like we're not doing this with you. It would be like an utter disaster.
No, it really wouldn't. I guess like a modern example of it was the guy who tried to buy the Islanders, who lied about how much money he had when he went to the bank to get the loan, and then turned out it was just a huge, it was just a fraud. Like, I feel like if you and I try to pull like that kind of, like, that's like my best comparison, but times were different back then, and Nick Mahleti was just, I guess maybe his determination, and he's that mantra of speaking into existence. Didn't really give up on the fact that he wanted to bring a basketball team to Cleveland, and he knew exactly where he wanted when he made Bill Fitch the head coach, and it obviously worked out for the best. But a lot of his tactics today is just like so shady and underhanded. And like, if he approached me and said like, listen, you'll make your money back eventually. Like, he's a snake oil salesman. Like, there's no other way to put it. That's just definitely just interesting in my mind that he's able to really pull the wool over so many people's eyes just in order to make his vision a reality. And then when he sold the team to the Guns, he he cashed out pretty well and did pretty okay for himself in the end.
The other thing about this that I thought was interesting was that he plays the NBA and ABA are sort of like still rivals at this point, and it's really like a push to get them like really
good. Well, isn't it interesting that they're fighting over Cleveland?
And like it's like it's like Portland, Cleveland, and Buffalo maybe, or like the yeah. three cities. I know it's Portland was one of the other ones. That in itself is just like quite
Cleveland
hilarious.
Afterthoughts. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just yeah.
It's amazing that like he was able to do that in the AB and Pluto. This is one of the points where like Pluto is like he's like annoyed about the three pointer. Had the 3-point shot. Yeah. Like this was like a risky proposition and it's like lumped in with like all the other things. Like because of the blue ball. And a lot of owners like Mileti. And there's obviously the great are you a semi-pro fan of the movie?
Yes, I like that movie a lot just from the overall ridiculousness of it and the fact that they like traded a washing machine for Woody Harrelson's character and like the juxtaposition of a team being named the Tropics in Flint, Michigan, one of like the coldest great. And most depressing cities in the country, is just—it's just comedic. It's great. It's a good bad movie. That's what I'd say if you're looking into watching semi-pro.
Yeah, when I look at this, I'm flipping through this. Terry Pluto notes that he was like a small part owner in the Cavs. This is what Mileti says and to a guy named Bruce, how a guy named Bruce Fine describes Mileti, and here's how Pluto describes it. I knew Fine. I recall him telling me how you could buy into Mileti's early sports ventures for as little as $50,000. Fine wasn't sure if Mileti could make money while owning any of his franchises, but he believed Mileti would eventually sell. And when he did, it would be for a higher price than various investors paid to join the original deal. This is literally just like his whole gambit is to just like sell you what you need to do. And he has to raise like $3.7 million, uses the plain dealer and uses the like local like interviewing with local newspapers to sell these, has to recruit new ventures. And this is part of him is that he buys the Barons, the crappy Cleveland Arena, and a new NBA franchise in a crazy amount of ways. And he doesn't even pay the NBA the full amount up front. He pays them $1.5 million to get into the league, and then $550,000 for four more years. Yeah, they put him on a payment plan. Can I just say I want more of this?
That wouldn't work today. Yeah, I would love to have more of this. And the fact that I also think it's wild that he sold 49% of the then Cleveland Arena and the Barons for $510,000 and the Arena for $1.3 million. Then he instantly flipped that in order to help fund the Cavs. And then he did like that grassroots campaign, like I said, where he sold $3 a share of stock for the Cavs and virtually worthless on paper because he'll always have the controlling share and interest of the Cavs. But I would love to see more of this, just to watch a man so desperately wanting to bring an NBA team to his city and make it happen. But, maybe Seattle can be our new test. Like, we'll watch how quickly Seattle can crowdfund their own team and play in their eco-friendly arena going forward. But
it's
fascinating to watch how determined he is. Wouldn't that be something, though, to have a crowdfunded NBA team?
Literally, would just...
Like a Patreon where, like, there's tiers based on like your stake of the ownership. Like if you give X amount of dollars per month, like you have a certain, like there's like a general manager tier or something like that. That'd be really fun. It'd be chaos. It'd be utter chaos. Like it'd be like one of the worst run teams in the league, but also just an interesting social experiment to watch unfold as well.
No, it'd be incredible. And I don't think the league would allow it. Like they purposely pick owners that are like very rich for, you know, a reason. This is just like one of those things where like the 1970s would have been an amazing decade to live through. Not in every way. I would not want to live through the 70s in every way, but in a lot of ways, I think the 70s would have been amazing to live through.
The 70s would have been fun to live through, but this has always been like my problem because like I've dealt with people in my high school and college and like family and everything. So like, oh, I was born in the wrong generation. I should have been born in the 80s, blah, 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 blah. Like, I've also become really accustomed to some of the luxuries that come with living in their current age. Like, there's plenty of terrible things going on in 2020 that make me want to just have it vanish from the rest of my life. But at the same time, there's so many modern things in terms of medicine and technology that I've grown accustomed to that I don't think I'd want to go back to the 70s. But yeah, it wouldn't work. It definitely worked then, but like you said, I don't think the NBA would allow this to happen now.
The cost of a franchise is also just an astronaut. It's like $3 billion instead of $3 million.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think the turning point is when the Clippers were sold to Steve Ballmer, like the valuations of franchises just skyrocketed. I mean, also just like, it's not just the location, it's who's on your roster as well. Like the LeBron effect is big too. Like when LeBron left the first time around for the Cavs, their valuation dropped considerably while Miami's went up quite a bit. And then when LeBron came back, Cleveland's value as a franchise went super high. And then I even remember at the time when it was LeBron's last year. That Dan Gilbert was going to sell him to try and like make back as much money as he did because he was paying so much in the luxury tax at that point. Like, crowdfunding would be something. It would take a lot of money in order to like even get your foot in the door. And at that point, like, I don't know how keen the NBA is to expansion. I mean, like, I feel like Seattle is inevitable, but then I wonder if they want to balance things. Do they add a 32nd team as well? Like, it just entirely depends on location at that point.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Any final thoughts as we get out of here?
Like I said, this is a fun book. I had a really fun time reading it, and Nick Meloni is definitely a character. Like Dan Gilbert's got his lumps, but I wonder how chaotic things would be right now if like you took 70s Nick Meloni and just like plopped him in as the owner of the Cavs now. Like, I wonder if things would be just as wacky as they were probably then.
I think that my favorite thing about this book is just that it is a breezier read. It's kind of like a nice tonal read for where we're at right now.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. It's like a trip down memory lane, and I had a good time reading it. And like you said, it was just a little bit refreshing. And once we start getting into the nitty-gritty of stuff, like, you can really have some serious discussions. So, like, this is a good entry point, like a good way to set the old to what the weirdness that, you know, maybe it's just that it's always going to be a thing with the Cavs. Like, there's never a dull moment with this team. And even back then, like, when they were founded, like, there was never a dull moment at all.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, that is going to be it for today's episode of Locked on Cavs. Evan and I are going to be back later this week with more. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for supporting us along the way. We'll be back decision episode next week, a whole bunch of other stuff. We'll learn more about the bubble surely in the coming days and how the Orlando bubble goes as well. But stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. Stay safe, wear a mask, social distance, and talk to you soon.